Welcome in to the OMR podcast. I'm your host, Scott Peterson, International Marketing Editor at OMR. Today, it is time to get rich, people, and we are talking trading with eToro founder and CEO, Yoni Assia. Yoni co-founded eToro in 2007 with his brother, Ronan, and has since seen the app grow from a trading platform into a social platform with a host of products, from portfolios, crypto, individual stocks, and all the like, to offering crypto wallets, as well as a patented copy trading feature, which, as the name implies, lets you mirror the positions and activities of anyone on the platform. We discussed the genesis of the company, the failed IPO, as well as a prominent advertising campaign, or several of them, I should say, both in the sports sponsorship space, as well as ads with Alec Baldwin, and of course, last year's 30-second Super Bowl spot. We even had the time to discuss Yoni's infamous crypto dinner with the GOAT of investing himself, Warren Buffett. It is informative, to say the least. It's also quite entertaining, and it's all coming up right now in the OMR podcast. Buzz. So I am pleased to be joined right now by CEO and founder of eToro, Yoni Assia. Yoni, how are you doing today?
Very good, very good. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm thrilled to have you on the OMR podcast. And there's a lot going on in the eToro world and a lot of stuff that I'm looking forward to exploring. But I think I'd like to start with just kind of how it's evolved over the years. And it kind of starts, you know, obviously with its founding in 2007 as a mobile trading app. That certainly continues to be, I would say, the primary feature. But like I said, it's evolved into more than just a trading platform. How would you describe what eToro is right now in its current iteration and what its primary mission is?
Sure. So we started eToro with a vision of opening the global markets for everyone to trade and invest in a simple and transparent way. We've evolved over the years to become the world's largest social investment platform with 30 million users who registered into a social platform where they can open their profile, follow the various markets from stocks from all around the world to crypto assets and the global markets, and then open a brokerage account with us, trade commission-free stock trading alongside crypto assets. And the unique part of eToro is it's a transparent social network. So you can actually see all of the people's performance, their track record over time, their actual portfolio location. So you can actually go into the app and write my name, Yoni Assia, and you'll see my entire portfolio and my stats over time, the number of trades, what I'm trading in. And the unique part of eToro is the ability not only to trade the markets directly on your own, but when you see someone good in the markets, which we call our popular investors, you can automatically copy them. So with a click of a button, you can actually copy someone's portfolio. So you choose an amount like $1,000, you copy them, it copies their entire portfolio into your portfolio. And every time they trade, it trades on your account at the same time and the same price. So the social network enables both people to learn from one another, to collaborate with one another, as well as to automatically copy the most successful investors in the network.
So like, walk me through the copy trading feature. How it, like, is literally that simple? I see somebody, I see how fantastic of an investor you are, and I'm a newbie just kind of starting out, and I can just set the limits of how much I would like to invest, and then copy paste, and it's just automatically mirroring your activity.
Exactly. That's the beautiful thing about copy trading. And we have, out of about 2.7 million brokerage accounts, about 2,700, so one out of 1,000 retail investors becomes a popular investor, and they actually get paid from us in relation to how many people copy them. So just as an example, some of our elite pro popular investors have tens of thousands of people copying them with tens of millions of dollars copying them. So while they're retail investors from their home, some of them have track records of 5 to even 10 years in eToro, so you can really see their track record over time. And with a click of a button, you simply copy their entire portfolio into your allocated amount.
Okay. Now, could you, I'm assuming that this history or something is not editable so that people couldn't like just kind of, you know, like sweep some of their bad mistakes under the rug, per se. But I also imagine that that kind of social pressure from the outside on investors would give them pause as far as taking riskier positions.
Probably taking less riskier positions. So just as an example, over the last couple of years, we've grown immensely, obviously, with the rise of retail investors and the very bullish markets, both in stocks and crypto in the last 2 years. But since we've actually grown quite a bit also in the first crypto rally from 2017 to 18, what we've seen is that a lot of our popular investors who made significant amounts of money, both to themselves and to their copiers in crypto, during crypto winter in 2018 and 19, actually diversified quite a bit their portfolios into stocks. So what we've seen is people sort of start trading in one asset class, then gradually learn probably the most important lesson to be learned in capital markets, and that's the importance of diversification, which is also a great part of copy trading, because even if you're a great retail investor and you understand some sectors, whether it's technology or whether it's green energy or whether it's the opposite of green energy, which is oil and gas industry, it's always good to diversify your portfolio by copying others who understand maybe other parts of the market.
Fair enough. Okay. So I'd like to go back a little bit to 2007 and talk a little bit about the genesis for eToro and how you came up with the idea. If I'm not mistaken, it was you and your brother who founded the company back then. And what was it about this project that seemed so appealing?
So I've been passionate about capital markets since I was very young. I started trading when I was 13. We always used to talk about the markets in my house, as my father was also a CEO and a founder of a publicly traded company. And I got very passionate about capital markets early on, as well as passionate about technology. I'm a computer programmer. And during my first and second degrees in computer sciences, I always focused on capital markets, on algo trading, on visualizing financial trading. And I co-founded the company together with Ronen, my older brother, who always used to make fun of me that I have somewhat of an accountant fetish, that I sit in front of multiple screens and charts and Excels with the newspapers open up. And the dialogue that we started back in 2006 leading to setting up eToro was, this is a very exciting world, which we believed very much and still do, that most people need to understand how to manage their money and how to invest their money in capital markets. But the user interface back then and still today, if you consider banks' user interface, was very bad. And we wanted to simplify and hack the user experience to create better access, better tools for retail investors on the internet to access capital markets. Of course, part of that was creating fractional shares, enabling people to open accounts today with as low as $10 or $50 in many markets. And of course, we've seen sort of the entire transition from creating a desktop app back in 2007, where mobile basically didn't exist, to becoming a social network for investors, and obviously focusing very much later on all of our efforts to become mobile first.
Okay. Now, so the I guess my question is, so it's a fintech company, but it seems like the user experience is one of the main drivers, I would say. Not one of the main drivers, but one of many. That has kind of helped you grow, especially this user interface, because you just mentioned that some of the incumbent banks, like the, you know, the legacy players or whatever in the market, they have very clunky kind of user faces, or maybe they don't have any apps whatsoever. I'd like to kind of dig into like the competition and how you see how eToro is different from them, whether it's Robinhood or E-Trade, Ameritrade, or full disclosure partner of OMR, Trade Republic. How does eToro kind of differentiate itself from those other competitors?
Sure. So as I mentioned before, I think first and foremost is the social network part of eToro. A lot of the companies you mentioned are purely trading platforms and don't have that part of the social interaction where people can really learn from one another and see the performance of others. We believe that that element in eToro of both the social element where people can communicate and see how others perform, as well as the ability to copy them, is really what's unique about eToro and gives the ability to our users to educate themselves much more about the markets through social interaction. The other part is the global nature of eToro. So when we look at the competitive landscape of the world of trading and investing, we usually sort of segment it to the incumbents, right? So in most countries, banks have bought what was sort of the traditional discount brokers. And in every country, it's a very local ecosystem. So we operate today, eToro, we're regulated in Europe, in the UK, in Australia, in the US, just starting now in the UAE and Singapore. And when we look at each of those markets, the more traditional players usually are very much local players who operate only in local markets. Our view has always been that the markets are global markets and people should have easy and simple access to manage their investments globally. So we offer our customers to trade both US stocks as well as European stocks, some Asian stocks, but also to trade crypto assets, which again is a differentiator from some of the more traditional brokers.
Okay. How many active users are on eToro at the moment?
So we have about 30 million registered users. Out of those, about 2.7 million are funded brokerage accounts with us.
Okay. And just for a little bit more context, what is the trading volume roughly per year?
It's actually very high trading volumes. So we're talking about $5-6 billion of trading volumes a day.
Okay. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about like some of those products that people can expect and have access to on eToro, whether it's your fiat currencies, stocks, commodities, and then cryptocurrencies as well. But there's also CFDs. You have a crypto wallet for investors to store their newly acquired crypto. You also curate and manage portfolios, if I'm not mistaken. So like the recently unveiled ESG portfolio, which is the environmental, social, and corporate governance portfolio. You offer a very diversified range of products. What features are the most popular? Which ones are the most widely used?
So generally, what we see is that retail investors sort of shift where the interest is currently, you know, on the internet. So obviously, when we've seen sort of the bull markets of 2020, a lot of the activity was on commission-free stock trading. On a lot of assets like Tesla, and later on, obviously, GameStop and other stocks, which were very popular with retail investors. With the crypto rally of 2021, we've seen a huge influx of customers coming to trade crypto, whether it was Bitcoin and Ethereum. And later on, we've seen already the sort of three very interesting trends in 2021 of people investing in all of the DeFi protocols, in the sort of Dogecoin and Shibas of the world, and a lot of in tokens of the metaverse. So those are obviously a lot of the things we see sort of reflects the interest of retail investors on the internet directly on eToro. And it's super interesting always to look at that data. We also share on a quarterly basis a report of the most traded stocks and crypto assets on the platform. With the use of our data, we're able to sort of see what's interesting for our users. You mentioned our portfolio product, and we create thematic portfolios around basically areas of interest of our clients. So just as an example, Tesla is usually the most traded stock on eToro with very passionate followership on the eToro platform. And what we've noticed is that Tesla traders, Tesla investors also like to invest in driverless car companies, so other driverless car companies, other green energy companies. So mm-hmm. we created portfolios, which are a basket of basically stocks that are managed by our own investment team. So with a click of the button, using the same technology of CopyTrader, you can actually copy a portfolio. So you can invest in basically a portfolio of driverless car companies that is managed internally. And then we provide some context and some education about these themes. As you mentioned, one of the most recent ones was the ESG portfolio, which was very popular. And adding to that, we've also added ESG scoring into the platform. So we enabled our customers to educate themselves about ESG and then also invest in an ESG portfolio on the platform.
So you're basically, you're not only providing the products, you're providing the information to make an educated, informed decision on the portfolio within the platform. So you are just, once users are in the platform, you're trying to keep them in there, offer them as much as possible and keep them in there for as long as possible.
Correct. And we're always monitoring what's happening in the markets to try mm-hmm. and provide to our users access to what's interesting right now. So just as an example, we've recently launched the ability to track NFTs directly from your Ethereum wallet. Now we're adding Polygon mm-hmm. and Avalanche support, so you can actually manage your portfolio of NFTs as well and buy and sell NFTs. We're looking now into adding yield generation products into the platform as we see rates going up and some mm-hmm. interest of clients in things that are more yield or basically investments that are more protective considering what's happening right now in the markets. So we are always trying to find what is the interesting products, the products that are relevant currently for our customers to trade and invest in.
All right. And speaking of crypto, there's a report that I came across recently that was in regard to Robinhood, which we'd mentioned before, that the only crypto that had any tangible positive effect on their revenue in the past year was Dogecoin. So I'm just curious, like, how big of an impact does crypto trading have on eToro? I would imagine that could be like the most popular product, but also of incredibly risky commodity at that.
So as I mentioned before, everything sort of relates to time and interest of retail investors. There's no doubt that last year we had a significant crypto rally with Bitcoin actually reaching 2 all-time highs during the year in Q2 and in Q3. Mm-hmm. And last year, crypto was a very significant part of our revenues. It was about mm-hmm. 58% of our revenues coming from crypto. Quite okay. diversified, though, revenues coming from more than 70 different crypto assets we support. But if you look at 2020, for example, crypto was only about 15% of revenues. And when we look at this year, we obviously see, as we entered crypto winter in this Q2, we obviously see less engagement and activity on crypto. And I think a lot of the interest shifted towards both capital markets, both stocks, as well as mm-hmm. we see a lot of interest in trading commodities outside the U.S.
So does the volatility in crypto kind of coincide with a spike in interest in more traditional products like ETFs or savings plans? Or does the interest for growth-driven assets like options and individual stocks continue to remain high?
Well, we're still seeing a lot of interest in crypto as well. So while mm-hmm. interest levels are lower than what they were last year, we still see a lot of people coming in to trade crypto on eToro. But I'd say mm-hmm. the amount of people coming in today to trade stocks in more traditional markets are much higher on a percentage basis versus crypto last year. And we've seen that also in the last crypto winter in 2017-18, there was a huge mm-hmm. rally where Bitcoin topped at $20,000 where it is now. And then we've seen in 2018 and 19 how our customers sort of shift more towards stocks gradually and then come back to crypto as the rally started in 2021.
All right. So of the 3 million plus roundabout active users that you have on the platform, how many would you say actually end up making money? Because I know there's something that you have listed just regarding like CFD trading, but that 79% of private investors end up losing money because it's a very risky asset class. So I'm just curious, like how many people, especially newer investors, can actually expect a return? And what are some of the mistakes that maybe some newer investors to the game, so to speak, make that maybe are a quote unquote easy fix?
So as I mentioned before, I think the most important lesson in investing is diversification and understanding of the risk of your portfolio. So I'm a big fan of the world of investing. I've been investing since I was very young. You can actually go and see my portfolio on the platform, which generated about, I think, 30 plus returns on average for the last 10 years, but a very, very volatile portfolio, since I'm also a big fan of crypto and about 50% of my portfolio is on crypto. So all in all, there's no doubt that this year has been a much worse year for retail investors, as the interest of retail investors usually is towards more riskier assets, whether it's crypto or whether it's, for example, technology stocks, which also came down this year. But The main lesson of investing is to invest to the long term. So when you believe in a company, when you invest in a company, whether you know it's a company like Apple or Google, you should always take a long-term approach versus a short-term approach. And the same is for your portfolio. So what we focus on is helping our customers understand the risk of investing, how they can diversify their risk by investing in different assets and different industries when they invest in the markets, and to take a long-term view of their portfolio. So while this year is obviously much worse than last year from a returns point of view, it's always important to look at a long-term view, the last 3 years, and also where we expect the markets to be in the future.
Sure. It kind of echoes a lot of the advice that the GOAT himself, Mr. Warren Buffett, would give, is it not? To take a long-term approach and to invest in EFTs.
Definitely. And one of my role models, which I had even the pleasure to have dinner with just in 2020. And he really, you know, for me, it was an aha moment meeting with Warren Buffett, because when he talks, you know, and I've read the books and read a lot of the quotes of Warren Buffett, but being at that dinner with him and hearing how much he believes in the world of investing and the view of long-term investing and that people should be invested in the markets, I think that for me sort of reaffirmed the beautiful thing about opening the markets for more retail investors. And also the fact that if you think about our popular investor program, they've been adding every year another year of performance. So when you look at our popular investor program, you can find people today with even 10 years of track record. And that's interesting because every time Berkshire has their annual meeting, they always publish, I think it's like a 30 plus year track record, which really shows some years are bad, some years are good, but you need to look at the long term to really appreciate an investor.
All right. So like how does the dinner come about? Or like, what were you talking about discussing there?
Well, it was the famous crypto dinner with Warren Buffett. Justin Sun, the founder of Tron, bid on what usually is a lunch with Buffett. This one was a dinner eventually. And the group itself was a group of crypto entrepreneurs with the view, I think, or Justin's mission to help Warren Buffett become a bit software or to liken more cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. And the discussion itself was quite interesting. I think around the table, I was the only ones who was sort of more diversified in capital markets and the stock markets, as well as crypto. But I think at the end, he sort of affirmed more my belief how important it is to be diversified and to not be all in into one asset class versus us being able to convince him that he should invest in Bitcoin. But his views are similar, by the way, also to gold. So he is not a big believer in commodities. He is not a big believer in assets that don't generate basically products and value. Again, you can argue about the crypto asset on a wider approach, right? But when you think of Bitcoin as digital gold, I think his view is similar to some extent to why he says he doesn't invest in gold.
All right, fair enough. Well, if you are a new investor, just getting new to the game, Warren Buffett is obviously must read for anybody. And with that in mind, I kind of wanted to talk about like your user base. Is it because I think like eToro itself, it offers plenty of very, I would say, advanced products and asset classes and markets and all of these kind of niche products, I would say, but also like some of the more mainstream products as well to attract new users. So you're kind of addressing new users and experienced investors. And I'm just curious, how do you go about kind of juggling those two primary target groups?
I think, you know, a part of our mission is to open the markets for more retail investors. And then a part of our responsibility is to help them educate themselves about the markets and become experienced. So we provide a lot of educational tools other than obviously the core features and the ability for people to learn from one another. But the way we view it, people come to eToro, some of them might be new to investing. So about 50% of our new clients say this is the first time they trade or invest in the markets. But over time, they obviously grow their experience. They learn more about the markets. They join our webinars. They collaborate and communicate with others. And then gradually, we also open up more features, more advanced features for users. We've recently announced the acquisition of an options trading platform, and we'll be launching eToro Options. Obviously, options trading is a more complex instrument, but it also has the benefits of capturing sometimes things that you can't capture through just investing regularly in stocks. So again, I think eventually becoming an experienced investor and learning how to navigate the markets is something more people should do. And if they don't have the time or the passion to do so, they can always copy the popular investors on eToro.
Well, fair enough. And I want to, like, with that, with the mind of, like, reaching out and, like, making the market more accessible to as many people as possible, to everybody who's interested in it, regardless of where they are location-wise in the world, I want to kind of talk about, like, the exposure and some of the channels and measures that you've been using to kind of to raise awareness for eToro. And that includes a lot of like these very high profile marketing campaigns that you had in place. For example, in 2018, eToro began to sponsor seven football clubs in the Premier League, including Tottenham Hotspur and Leicester. And then you expanded, you added some more clubs in England and Germany. You were a sponsor for the UFC, a MotoGP team, and also a three-year deal at the Nations Rugby Series. And then also last year, if you're an American football fan, you probably recall a 30-second spot during the Super Bowl. So I'm just kind of wondering, like a lot of these high-profile things, and I haven't even talked about Alec Baldwin yet, people, but we're getting to there. But a lot sports seems to be, has been identified by eToro as a very good fit. I'm curious as to why that is from a marketing perspective.
So first, our approach to marketing is a very analytical approach. And we've grown our marketing budget significantly as the markets have grown significantly. So last year, our marketing budget was actually over $500 million. So quite a sizable marketing budget to bring in new users into the world of investing. So out of about $1.2 billion in revenues, we spent $500 million last year on marketing. And as you can imagine, a big part of that is the performance marketing part. So that's the majority of our marketing, where you can really measure sort of the cost per impression, cost per lead, cost per click, et cetera, and evaluate CPA versus LTV. What we've learned over the years is when we look at more local markets, and again, we operate globally in many different markets, that as we also invest in sports marketing, we increase the brand awareness for customers, and eventually that impacts over time conversion and also retention of clients. And we've been able to sort of model that into our approach to sports marketing. When we evaluated with our customers and did surveys about sort of what are their hobbies. Maybe unsurprisingly, sport has been the most popular hobby of our customers, and specifically in Europe. It's European football, of course. Different markets, by the way, it might be a bit different. As you mentioned, we've also sponsored Gael Monfils in tennis. And I think all in all, we try to give a great service also to our club members. So the users in eToro who have more than $5,000 join the eToro club membership and can sort of scale up inside the club. Diamond clients are those who have more than $250,000. And those customers actually get invited also to matches and to sporting events. So it's both about creating brand awareness, increasing brand awareness to eventually improve both the brand and conversion into the platform, as well as give exciting opportunities to our club members to meet us and enjoy events.
Sure, customer retention funds as well, absolutely. But I'm just curious, you mentioned a little bit that you kind of baked in the impact on conversions over time that these awareness campaigns have. How could you get into a little bit more specifics on how you are like able to quantify some of the partnerships? Because, I mean, these are not, you mentioned $500 million US for a marketing budget. Like this, we're not talking pennies. This is not chump change. So you've got to have a return on it to point to.
Right. So generally, the way we look at return is also always sort of the cost per acquisition for a funded account versus the lifetime value of those customers. And we're very analytical in the approach of how do we measure lifetime value of a specific cohort of customers. Then we also look at time-based ROI of specific regions. So just as an example, when we spend performance marketing online, you can sort of measure every single ad and then do a multi-attribution to understand sort of the impact of different channels.
Multi-targeting.
Yeah, exactly. When we look at more offline marketing and sponsorships, we basically look at a percentage of the budget in a specific region that goes into brand and into sports marketing. And then we evaluate over time how brand awareness increases in that market, as well as how it improves eventually both conversion and retention of clients.
Okay. If you don't mind me asking, what are like generally an average, what is an average cost per customer acquisition?
So again, it varies quite a bit between various regions, right? So the US is different than Germany and is different than Australia and the UK. All in all, the cost per new lead in eToro, you know, could range between $10 to $30.
Okay. And I mean, you mentioned that it can be very expensive. Running a 30-second Super Bowl spot featuring Alec Baldwin, which was created by legendary agency Saatchi & Saatchi, that's obviously also not cheap. And you just kind of mentioned a little bit that these high exposure ads have like a tangible impact on awareness campaigns. But do they, would you say that they're more important than your traditional kind of performance-based campaigns where you can track everything, or they? How do you assess their and kind of measure up their risk versus the reward with regards to like running campaigns on LinkedIn or Facebook?
So generally, our view is a more 80-20 rule towards performance. So we allocate the majority of our budget towards performance marketing, whether it's, you know, our affiliates, our media buying, our mobile advertising, or sort of the large tech platforms like Google, Facebook, Twitter, and others. So and so it is more important for us to look at performance marketing and online marketing. The way we view sort of offline marketing and sports sponsorships is to improve eventually the conversion or the performance of the performance marketing.
Gotcha, understood. And so at the moment, what would you say is the most significant marketing channel in terms of overall performance?
I can't tell you all the secrets of eToro.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, you've been very forthcoming, as it were. But all right. Well, then maybe let's take a little look forward and kind of look at the eToro app as it is and where it might be heading. As it is, it doesn't seem, I mean, what eToro offers is this holistic kind of social, it's a social platform for investing, and it offers this holistic experience. And I'm just curious if there are plans in the works or if you've thought about maybe advancing it more towards super app territory, i.e. offering kind of more classic banking features, opening up accounts, those types of things.
Sure. So we actually launched this year and expanded quite a bit the eToro Money product. So the eToro Money product sort of evolved from our crypto wallet, where you could actually transfer crypto assets bought on the investment platform into a wallet where you can send and receive crypto. We've added to that virtual IBAN opening. So we started in the UK, then this year expanded into Europe. So when you open an account in eToro, you also basically open up a virtual bank account in either euro or pounds, which enables you to basically manage more of your funds on eToro. And in the UK, we rolled out also a debit card that's connected to your virtual IBAN. So it's definitely a part of our long roadmap to give more financial services access to our customers, mostly with understanding that it improves eventually the user experience of customers. And we want our customers to invest most of their assets. So again, I'm a very big believer in capital markets and that people need to invest their money in the markets. But we also want to make sure that if they want to spend money out of their account, they can do that very easily.
All right. And what about the IPO? You recently launched one. Didn't go quite as planned, I would say. There was a SPAC hiccup. But do you think you would be planning another IPO in the near or medium term?
Sure. So last year, as sort of bull markets soared, we had a great experience around sort of getting into the SPAC transaction. We raised $650 million at a $10 billion valuation where the markets were very high and exuberant. And that was a great experience to sort of learn and understand more capital markets and the IPO markets. Obviously, the markets have sort of shifted significantly. So we've made the hard decision, but I believe very much the right decision to remain a private company at this point, as we've seen a lot of basically the market sort of tanking over the last 9 months. But I do believe in the future of eToro as a public company, and I'm certain we'll execute a public offering in the next couple of years.
All right. Well, we'll be keeping our eyes out for that. I have one last question, and it's kind of going back towards the future of crypto and crypto exchanges. Our colleagues over at Finance Forward, which you know, you were on their podcast a couple of years ago, they did a recent ranking of effective costs among crypto exchanges that are currently available. eToro, of I think like six or seven different providers that they ranked, came in third in terms of effective costs, or the third most expensive, I should say, behind Coinbase and BitPay. Panda. And I'm just curious if you see, with more and more players coming into the segment, if there could be a price war kind of on the horizon where price competitiveness is going to be a very important factor in growth and attracting new customers, or if we can expect market consolidation. How would you...
Sure.
How do you see?
So first, it's important to understand that the crypto market is quite... segment into different parts of the crypto markets. There are sort of the more, let's call them semi-professional exchanges, which run basically on a book. So when you look at the costs, you usually look at sort of the top of book. And then you have companies, which we've also had in eToro X, which is opened for professional users who want to trade basically thin spreads across basically an order matching engine or a book. And then you have the more retail platforms such as eToro, such as Coinbase. And again, you see sort of a varying costs. I would say we're relatively on the cheaper side when you think of retail investors, and the professional offering for us is opened for professionals. I do think eventually we are seeing there is price competition in the markets. Obviously, stocks went to zero to commission free stock trading. And I also expect, as you mentioned, to see consolidation in the space. So I think now companies that have only been trading in crypto are probably sort of entering into a very stormy crypto winter. So I think we'll see consolidation in both sort of the crypto world as well as the neo brokerage space. A lot of new entrants came into the space as markets were very bullish. We were enjoying very much a huge inflection to 30 million registered users. But if you historically look at the brokerage industry, at brokerage sort of e-brokerage 1.0, it consolidated quite a bit, with sort of the end of consolidation era being Morgan Stanley buying E-Trade and Schwab buying TD Ameritrade in the US. And if you look historically at the European countries, most of the traditional brokerage were bought by the local banks. So I do think usually after a huge bull market, you do see consolidation in this space.
All right. Well, fantastic. That is all I have for you today. Thank you so much for joining me, Yoni.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Buzz.